Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whose uncommon intelligence and deep devotion to his country has served him well in a variety of capacities, including as a plankholder in the Department of Homeland Security. That is to say, he was one of the founding members of the organization in the years immediately after 9/11. He served with the Customs and Border Protection Service, and that included several tours of distinguished duty at the National Targeting Center in Washington, D.C. I'm speaking, of course, of our friend and senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, Philip Haney, a man who has come to be known by millions of Americans as a result not only of his background in all of these subjects, but also his work as an author of See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad, as well as his public speaking on these subjects all over the country in the aftermath of the publication of this important book. Phil Haney, it is a delight to have you back. We spoke briefly last week and resolved to get together for a longer visit. I'm thrilled that you're able to spend a full hour with us today. There's so much to talk about. Thank you again for your time and for your service to our country.
You're certainly welcome. I'm very glad to be here and address this important subject.
Well, I do want to talk, before we get into some of the specifics, Phil, about the subject writ large. And you've done an enormously impressive job of literally going to school on the nature of what I think of, it's a term that Andy McCarthy coined, I believe, as Sharia supremacism. Tell us about Sharia, as you've come to know it, and what it impels its followers to do.
Sharia is the law of Islam. Everything that the global Islamic movement is doing today throughout the world, whether it's saturation into the social structure of a country like ours, or it's overt violent jihad attacks, as we've seen 31,000 and counting around the world since 9/11, those are tactical efforts to achieve a common goal, which is the implementation of Sharia law. Sharia is defined, self-defined, as supreme to all other man-made forms of law, and that would include our own Constitution. We're not exempt from the malevolent influence of Sharia. I liken it to a gravitational force with planets and asteroids and moons orbiting around the planets, but the center of gravity, just like with the sun in our universe, is this powerful force called Sharia. And according to the Quran, chapter 2, verse 191 through 193, it states very plainly that the goal is to oppose all those who stand in the way throughout the world until the law of Allah prevails in the earth. And that would include, again, anything from what I call saturation, like water in a sponge from the bottom up, or putting pressure on the sponge from above, which is we call terrorism and violent attacks. It's all for the same purpose.
So let me drill down on that for a moment. And I should have said in introducing you, Phil, that two of the qualities that I've admired so much about you are the background as an entomologist, a bug guy, I think of you as, who has been able to bring your powers of observation and classification to bear on this other kind of vermin, if you will, people who are seeking to destroy our country in the name of Sharia supremacism. And secondly, the deep knowledge that you've developed by virtue of your study, first of Arabic, I think classical Arabic, if I'm not mistaken, and the Quran and other sacred texts of Islam. Talk a little bit about that background, Phil, and how it has informed the work that you've been doing, both in government and since you left.
When I was a field entomologist, I wasn't a lab entomologist, you know, the stereotype of in the movies of the guy with the white coat and the clipboard. I actually worked in the field, in field crops, everything from artichokes and apples to yams and zucchini. But my focus was on the Middle East. I always had an interest in that part of the world. And so many times I was able to travel overseas and work for either the USAID or the Department of Agriculture or as a guest of the government. For example, I worked in 1988 and 1989 in a place called Yemen and saw up close and personal, without any varnish or anyone looking over their cultural shoulder, exactly how Islam is played out in a real country that practices Sharia. For example, seeing young girls, 9, 10, 11, 12, being married to men that were 30 or 40 years older than them. There was no apology for it. There was no, you know, concern about political correctness. That was a normal part of the culture there. And those are the kind of things I saw. So that prompted me. As an entomologist, by the way, I studied ants. That was my particular specialty. And as everyone knows, ants follow trails. And so somewhere along the line, I made the realization, came to the realization that tracking terrorism is just like tracking ants. You follow the trail and you will always find the nest. And that was basically my nutshell approach to all the cases that I worked on when I was active duty. I would always look at the individuals, and I was resolutely sure that there would always be a connection to a network, i.e. the nest. And inevitably, every time, there will always be a connection between individuals and the organization that they're part of, especially within the context of Islam.
Well, I do want to come back to that, Phil, because, you know, we are hearing almost invariably when there is a terrorist incident that usually, initially, it's said that has nothing to do with Islam or terrorism, but oftentimes it turns out it does. But it's an individual, it's a lone wolf, and I want to sort of walk through with you that connection that you've talked about. But before we do that, Phil, I did want to ask you, one of the things that I understand, apart from what you've taught me over the years, is that Sharia obligates its adherents to engage in jihad, to spread this program, this totalitarian political, military, legal doctrine, if you will, worldwide. If you would, Phil, talk a little bit about jihad. You've mentioned, of course, the violent kind. That's the one that's most obvious, particularly in the post-9/11 world. But what other kinds of jihad do the faithful Sharia-compliant Muslims practice?
There are about five different kinds. One of them we know through a person we remember whose name was Anwar al-Awlaki. He was the American Yemeni-born of Yemeni parents, bilingual, meaning Arabic and English, bicultural, from the Arab Peninsula background, who translated the abstract concepts of jihad that we're talking about into English. That, by the way, is why every time we hear about somebody here in our country who's gone the way of jihad, fi sabil Allah is how you say it in Arabic, the way of jihad, it always goes back to Anwar al-Awlaki. And people are probably wondering, how come his name always keeps popping up? The reason why is because he left a legacy to the English-speaking world. He translated the abstract concepts of jihad and Sharia into English. And that is why the English-speaking world looks to him as a mentor, a sheikh, if you will, because they rely on his translations from Arabic into English.
And in this case, they've actually practiced in a number of cases his injunctions about not only what the purpose was, but how to go about doing it, a ministry that ultimately forced him to flee the country and subsequently be killed by a drone strike in Yemen. Phil, we have to pause for just a second. When we come back, we'll speak with Phil Haney about the five kinds of jihad. As you are likely to be a target of them, it would behoove you to know what shape they take. Phil Haney, the author of See Something, Say Nothing, will talk with us about that and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.